Today in Science from Wired.
As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
Want to learn how you can make smarter decisions with your money? Well, I've got the podcast for you. I'm Sean Piles, and I host NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Our show features our team of nerds, personal finance experts in credit cards, banking, investing, and more. And they'll help you make the most of your money while cutting through the clutter and misinformation in today's world of personal finance. You'll get clarity on strategies to help you build your wealth, invest wisely, shop for financial products, and plan for major life events. Listen to NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
The global danger of boring buildings. Unloved buildings turn to ruin, leading to a deluge of construction waste worldwide. Designer Thomas Heatherwick tells Wired why cities need to prioritize human health and joy in architecture. By Rob Reddick. Thomas Heatherwick is on a mission. The world's architects and city planners need to be driven to stop filling cities with dull buildings, the designer and founder of Heatherwick Studio believes. The health of the planet and its population may be at stake. If planners keep sanctioning buildings that nobody loves, then we run the risk of creating a glut of structures that, in the not-too-distant future, will be wastefully torn down, as there will be no one to advocate for them. But create buildings that spark joy, build attachment, and break the mold, and we could create structures that will be maintained for centuries. Not only that, Heatherwick says people need to better understand the emotional connection they have with the buildings around them. People know buildings affect them, he says, but exactly how this can be harnessed to influence design for the good of society still isn't clear. We're still at the very early days of understanding the science of how our feelings and our health relate to the buildings we see. Ahead of speaking at Wired Health, Heatherwick sat down to explain his campaign to humanize architecture, how widespread changes to design principles might come about, and what the real benefits of good buildings are. This interview has been edited for length and clarity. Our first question, why do we need more emotionally sympathetic architecture? Thomas Heatherwick's response, there's a problem all around us. Over the past 70 to 80 years, we've had an epidemic of characterlessness in newly built parts of cities. It isn't about any one individual building, it's about a prevailing characteristic that has defined itself as being functional. Buildings need to mean something to people, or they won't be sustained. They'll be more likely to be demolished. And in our environmental crisis, the demolition industry is society's giant dirty secret. Next question. It's certainly not something I've dwelled on. How big is this problem? Heatherwick replied, commercial buildings in the UK have an average lifespan of 40 years. I'm told that in Seoul, Korea, it's 30 years for commercial buildings. In China, the average age of a residential building is 34 years, a commercial building 35 years. There is a lot of carbon involved in designing and making these buildings. All the materials, transporting them and putting them together, let alone then demolishing an existing structure. Two-thirds of all waste in the UK is construction waste. The US demolishes 1 billion square feet of buildings a year. It's a global problem. The construction industry is responsible for roughly 10% of global emissions. We have to start saying to ourselves, every building must be designed to last centuries, not a little handful of decades. We are not responsible custodians for future generations unless we do that. Next question, how can we stop this churn? Heatherwick said there's an epidemic of buildings that aren't cared for by society. The question is, how do we change that? Because nothing is sustainable unless a society cares about it. I believe this epidemic of not caring is caused by a lack of visual complexity. How many boring glass buildings do you walk past where you peer in and there's just some kind of reception desk, some leather sofas? These buildings give nothing to passersby. Changing this doesn't have to be expensive. We don't have to make every building the Sydney Opera House. Vision tends to focus on the first 30 to 40 feet upwards of any built environment. That's where I believe we need to embed character back into building design. We need to make the exterior parts of buildings that people focus on more interesting, so that people want to protect rather than replace them. But most people aren't architects or city planners. They can't change the designs of what's being made. Indeed, we have a public that feel utterly powerless, and a construction industry that talks to itself but not to the public. That needs to change. We have public conversations about whether we should fly on holiday and use the carbon to go to Malaga or wherever, but there's no national conversation about the buildings that surround us. I spoke with the former chief medical officer of Great Britain, Dame Sally Davies, about hospitals and care homes in the UK. I asked her, "Why are the health environments I've been in so bad?" She said there's no one in charge. Separate health trusts run the buildings. The only way you'll make change, she said, is with patient pull. When patients say, "Oh, you're building a new cancer center? Have you seen the one in Dundee? Have you seen the one in Leeds? It's really good because they put plants in. It's made from wood." A half-decent leader will think, "We should probably have a look there." This made me realize there's no equivalent to patient pull in architecture. So that's the purpose of the Humanized campaign, to start this public conversation. Making buildings more engaging, and so more long-lasting, has obvious environmental benefits. But does this benefit individual people directly? We've done some polling. In the UK, we found that 76% of people we asked believe buildings affect their mental health. And yet building design is seen very much as an art, not something to do with health. But buildings are different from art. With a piece of music, you can take the headphones off. With a painting, you can walk away to another gallery. Buildings are the backbones of all our lives. So the humanized movement we've started also focuses on the need to look at the impact of the outside of buildings with more scientific eyes. While people say buildings affect their mental health, there's virtually no analysis of this, so the construction industry isn't equipped with useful information that it can use to make better designs. We then asked, what evidence is there that changing the outsides of buildings really could improve people's health? Dame Sally Davies replied, "We know that exposure to nature can de-stress you. This is the attention restoration theory developed by Rachel and Stephen Kaplan in the 1980s and 90s. And we know that visual exposure to greenery helps people recover quicker in hospital." On the other side of it, a scientist called Colin Ellard has researched the impact of flat, straight, monotonous, plain, shiny buildings on groups of people. He's found that levels of cortisol, the stress hormone, rise when we're next to buildings that are straight, smooth, and serious compared to buildings that have texture, shadow, and difference. And in my experience, often the places people really love have dirty lines, surprises, and unexpected things. I think that science will start showing us more that our minds need to be nourished with interestingness, emotion. But there is zero hard research about this for design students to respond to. We're still at the very early days of understanding the science around how our feelings and our health are related to the buildings we see. It feels like for a long time we've taken for granted and haven't interrogated the potential impact of the structures we see around us. Cities and towns are so important. The digital revolution we thought would bring us all closer has in certain ways made people further apart. COVID has really shifted society, accelerating things to the point where you can stay at home. Algorithms divide us and create echo chambers. We need togetherness more than ever. People can speak incredibly poisonously to each other online, but if you put them in a room together, more civility, empathy, and understanding of others' backgrounds or perspectives often breaks out. And so physical meeting spaces, the streets and squares of our cities and towns, are really needed for the health of society. Buildings are the walls of those public rooms. I know I sound romantic when I say that, but I really believe it. Society has to be designed so people respect each other and bring each other together. And those buildings are part of the kit. Thanks for listening to Wired. My name is Zeke Robison, and for more stories like this one, visit us at wired.com. Like what you learned? Subscribe everywhere you listen to podcasts and get more science news at wired.com/science.
Want to learn how you can make smarter decisions with your money? Well, I've got the podcast for you. I'm Sean Piles, and I host NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Our show features our team of nerds, personal finance experts in credit cards, banking, investing, and more. And they'll help you make the most of your money while cutting through the clutter and misinformation in today's world of personal finance. You'll get clarity on strategies to help you build your wealth, invest wisely, shop for financial products, and plan for major life events. Listen to NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.